So, Haere Mai Ki Kick Arts, Tamaki Makaurau's comprehensive art show brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6 or live stream planetaudio.org.nz. Call Richard Green, tenor, your host for the next 90 minutes, and boy, we've got a great show for you. Flying solo tonight because actually it seems to be a weekend of birthdays. I want to do a big shout out. Georgia, our wonderful co-host, is actually at her grandmother's 80th birthday party today, and that is quite a milestone, and happy birthday, Liz. I got to know Liz during the Titirangi Festival of Music, and wonderful person, and I hope you had a great day with your whānau, and it was really enjoyable. And another shout out to my mother-in-law Eleanor, who turned 73 this week, and we had a dinner for her this afternoon. It was this afternoon, because you know, you don't want to be driving late at night, do you, when you're 73? But that's alright, because Don will drive her home. Don Bassett, who's often here reviewing stuff for us, was the safe driver home. So I hope you had a good time and you're driving home now to tuck yourself up for another week of celebration. And also another celebration, my son turned 20 today. He's in London, and he's probably not listening because it's about 7 o'clock in the morning, and he's off to a thing. He listens to a podcast, and you know what, for the love of God, I can't remember what it is, but he listened to it when he was a teenager, and he still listens to it, and there's a live show going on in London. So if you happen to tune in, Jackson, you have a great day there doing podcasty things with the people what do stuff. So that's my introduction. You know, normally at this point to my guests, I normally have a bit of a banter with my co-host who's not sitting in her chair. So
you can banter with us.
I can banter with you. Well, and welcome Tania and Fiona from the Jubilation Choir.
Thank you.
Jubilation is such a great name. It's such a celebratory title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
We voted on it. We had a brainstorm.
Not
and
me.
This was before Tania's time. Tania's a newbie to the choir, but we formed in the year 2000. And we had a brainstorm, and we had a huge list of possible names, and we voted, and Jubilation came out on top. Did you know that one of the meanings of the word jubilation is a freeing of slaves?
No, I didn't.
That's what a jubilation was.
Oh, I didn't know that.
As well as being, you know, jubilant and all the rest of it.
That's pretty good. So you're freeing yourself from slavery in singing? Because there's a sense of freedom in singing.
I could probably make a case for that.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
Emotional
every
slavery.
Every Tuesday night we get freed from the slavery of our homes and get to sing.
Do you meet every Tuesday?
Every Tuesday night is our practice, yeah.
Is it hard to keep that commitment? Because, you know, Tuesdays, maybe Coronation Street's
on. Oh, God, what happens
on
a Tuesday in your life? You know, nothing really happens on a Tuesday in my life.
Well, actually, what I find is every Tuesday, I've got meetings every Tuesday. It seems to be Tuesday's my
meeting. That's where people put them. But you see, if you're in a choir, you can go, look, I'd love to come to your meeting, but I've got choir practice.
Do I, if I want to be part of the choir on a Tuesday, do I need to audition for it?
Yes, you do.
Oh,
you sing?
Do I? Well, this is a conversation we have on Kick Arts quite a lot, because we talk about the love of musicals or the lack of love of musicals. And my introduction to theatre as a 11-year-old was being involved in a musical. So I could sing, but the whole choir thing, the whole keeping the tune, I don't know whether I'm
well,
an alto,
kind of
soprano,
part of being
baritone.
A choir is keeping, keeping the tune. Kind of,
I'd probably nail the audition, but then I'd get there and I wouldn't practice.
Oh, you would, because you'd be there every Tuesday night.
Oh,
yeah. It's like you don't have to practice. I mean, I don't know. Some people do, but you don't have to practice outside of the Tuesday night unless you want to. No, unless you're really slow.
But you do have to keep the tune.
Yeah, it's a prereq.
And
if you've got something amazing on, like, you know, a play or you're overseas, you don't have to come.
You can give your apologies.
Yes.
Yep.
Because how many people are there
It's currently about 32, I think, give or take.
Oh, my Lord, 32 people, trying to coordinate them on a Tuesday. Is that hard work?
Well, you just
we know
it
it's choir night and we always go. We're good like that.
So who's the choir mastress?
Well, the president is Isolde Grunwald.
Oh, she's not.
Yes.
What a great name.
Yes. Oh, I thought you knew Isolde.
No.
But we have sort of a management team and we have a music group and we have a publicity group. Wow. So we're kind of
we
like
share
a,
the jobs because there is no one person who conducts all the time and tells everybody what to do. There's about five people who conduct and there's about five people who arrange the songs. So they're the most musically able people. So most of the rest of us tend to do what
they
say.
Just go do it. You do it because I'm
you do it.
I don't know
you stand
that.
Up and wave your arms about. Yes. I could not for the life of me.
And I can't read music, so when they say, is in G, blah, I go,
whatever.
It's la.
Do you say things like, homie, G, yo, G?
Yo, G. No, I just go, I know what note I start on. You call it what you like.
That's a good call, because I learnt the violin for 3 years, studied music at school, still have no idea what a G sounds like.
Oh, there you are.
Middle C.
Well, I haven't got perfect pitch, so I couldn't pluck it out of the air for you, but some of them can. Yeah.
Really?
The ones who've got perfect pitch, you go, sing me an A flat, and they will, and it is A flat.
Do you think anyone can sing? Everyone can sing?
No.
Should I be honest or kind?
Be honest.
No.
I think probably everybody can learn to sing in some way, shape or form. Some people are more naturally gifted than others, you know, and some people you don't want to hear them sing.
Because one of the most horrible things, I think, is that when parents tell their children you can't sing and that puts them off, and that's quite common.
Or teachers at primary school tell people that they can't sing. Somebody that I know well had a very terrible experience like that, where they were learning the song for the school concert. It was Billy Don't Be a Hero. And he was putting his heart into it because he really loved the song. And then the teacher was coming around and doing that awful thing that they used to do where they put their ear next to everybody's mouth, walking along the row. And she said, now, tomorrow, won't say the name, but tomorrow, when we're doing the concert, would you just open and close your mouth but not actually sing?
That is so rude.
And he was scarred, just scarred.
Do I know this person?
Oh, you might do. I was going to say we could do charades, but we're on the radio, so that would be a little unfriendly.
Yeah, it doesn't translate well,
No. There's a lot of dead air in a charade. Yeah. But that sort of thing happens to people at school, or happened. I hope it doesn't still happen, but it did happen all the time. It was very judgmental, and it is an awful thing to think that you're being judged about your voice, because it is very emotional and very personal, and
but it also can affect so many other things. You can lose your confidence. Because I'm a big believer that the arts are, a strong indicator of success later in life. And even if you don't take it as a career, if you learn it at school, you get the opportunity to learn how to draw, to sing, to talk, speech competitions, those sorts of things, can actually be really good for you down the track. And if you get told you can't do it, if you get told you can't do anything at all.
Exactly.
I wasn't the best soccer player in my team.
Weren't you?
No, but
you look so fit.
Most enthusiastic.
Oh, most improved.
I had so many trophies.
But
that
kind of judgment and negativity is actually never helpful.
Quite common.
Quite
common, I find.
And we've got to grow out of it.
Yeah. No, I was just trying to fly in Billy Don't Be a Hero to play a little bit of it, but my Wi-Fi hotspot's not connecting, so we'll just move on. Because we've been ignoring Caleb.
I know, I did notice that.
Yeah.
Very patient, isn't he?
We have Caleb here in the studio.
I just had so many stories about being told that I can't sing or being told.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. They're wrong. People who said that were wrong, but
why did they say that, though? In what context?
I think I wasn't singing well, and I wasn't trying to sing well. I think it was probably Bon Jovi. It was probably high school. I was probably singing it very high and very screechy, because that's fun. But then you can sing properly and well as well.
Can you sing Bon Jovi well?
You seem to be begging for a demonstration.
No, I just mean anyone. No. Even John Bon Jovi. Were you a Bon Jovi fan?
Yeah, I think I was. Okay. I don't know if I am now, but I definitely was in high school,
to
my dad's disappointment.
That's okay.
Yeah. I was never a Bon Jovi fan because my memory of Bon Jovi was driving up Pacific Coast Highway in California with my then girlfriend and her convertible V dub, and she loved it. She just discovered it, so she played it over and over and over again. You know, when you hear something 16 million times
and you didn't like it in the first place,
and the love's gone. Mm. The love's
just
gone.
And you weren't the one pressing play.
No, no. Yeah. And it was a cassette tape, so I might have damaged it. So Caleb, because you have to sing because you're in a cabaret.
Well, I'm directing the cabaret.
Directing a cabaret. So you don't have to sing then.
I don't have to sing. I might, but I probably won't. I won't.
You have to notice a tune though, don't you?
Well, I'm not the musical director, so no, that's the beauty of it. I just can tell people to sing it beautifully and then they go away for a week and come back and it sounds great.
I've avoided directing musicals for that very reason. I felt I had to have some musical bone in my body, but obviously I don't.
I haven't before now. This is kind of my first crack at it, and it's been great because I think, yeah, I was worried about it. And then you have people to do it for you. You've got a musical director. You've got a choreographer. It's great. You don't need to worry about how to do that yourself.
So what do you worry about in a cabaret as a director? Are you like the event coordinator where you make people come on the right time and then go off at the right time, or is there some artistic input into the look and feel, the design, the stuff?
Well, this show's a little different because it's a cabaret, but it's an immersive cabaret. So the space we're making, we're sort of creating a secret cabaret club venue. And so audience members will walk into this place and the whole place will be a theatrical event, as it were. So I've kind of got to coordinate all that, as well as kind of putting cabaret bits together. And, well, because we've devised it as well, so we've got to kind of come up with some plot points and make it all run together.
Do you have to with devising that? Do you have to have a plot point?
No, but I think it was something we discovered that we wanted. We played around it early on and we thought, yeah, let's have a nice kind of...
With a cabaret, because cabaret is just you could sit at tables and listen to people sing songs and tell jokes, couldn't you?
Yeah.
But it's not like that?
It has an element of that.
Has a story?
But then it has a story as well. It's set in a world where... it's funny you were talking about the value of the arts before because our...
Well, I mean metaphorically.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Because Speakeasy's set in a world where... singing, dancing, acting, performance, all these sorts of things are illegal. So that this club, therefore, has to be kept very secret. Kind of like speakeasies back in Prohibition with alcohol, but instead of alcohol, it's song and dance and music and comedy and all that stuff. So we've kind of got to hide it and keep it.
So have I understood this right? Mm. Is it in a world... In a world that you're making up, singing and dancing is illegal?
In a sort of performance sense, like live performance is illegal for people to perform and put on, yeah.
That's a really interesting concept.
Well, thank you. We all thought it was.
Yeah. So. You ran with it.
Yeah, yeah. But doesn't it happen, though,
when you look at when things go wrong in countries? Mm. What's shut down first?
Yeah, the arts.
Poetry, yes. Music, theatre.
Or that terrible story, was it in Pakistan, of the young woman who got killed because she was supposedly... caught on a phone singing and playing music with some men.
Really?
Yep. Really.
Gosh. We live in a great country, don't we, in that sense that you can...
We're allowed to sing with boys every Tuesday.
We are allowed to sing.
Yeah.
That's right.
And people should sing more.
Yes.
I was on... Where was I? I was on a bus into the city on the Outerlink and I heard this wonderful... music happening, and then this person just burst into song, and this young man was singing with his headphones on the Outer Link on a Thursday evening. And
was that me? Might have been me.
Oh, might have been.
Was it?
No,
I
didn't.
On the way to rehearsal, going, I've got to nail this.
Yeah,
I've got to. I don't know what they mean. Yeah. Do you like musicals?
Yes,
you do.
I do.
Yeah,
it's something I've often kind of. I'm like, do I not? But my favourite movie is a musical.
What's so that?
Like, it's called Stilyagi, or the English translation is Hipsters, I believe.
Ah.
And it's Russian.
Stop it.
Yeah.
It's so exotic.
I can't. I just realised I'm saying, my favourite
movie is a Russian
musical.
About
hipsters.
It's great. No one seems to have watched it. And they've got these great costumes and this great music and this great story. It's a beautiful movie. Stilyagi, you should watch it.
Is it subtitles?
Well, you can get subtitles for it, yeah.
I don't speak Russian.
No. I'd love to, but I don't.
Yeah. Your story reminded me of I can't think how long ago it was, but I went... It was a long time ago. My husband and I were travelling, and we were on the subway in New York, and this guy leaped in with a saxophone and started playing this absolutely horrendously loud, terrible piece of music. And after a few minutes, he went, "Give me some money or I'm going to keep going." So everybody threw money at him, and then he waited at the, jumped out at the next stop and did it to the next poor sucker.
Musical terrorism.
Yeah,
that actually, that reminds me, in high school, we were doing West Side Story. I was in West Side Story High School, so I have had musical experience before. And I got on a bus to go home after rehearsal, and there was just me and the bus driver, and he just starts talking to me. He says, "Oh, what do you do? What were you doing tonight?" And I was just like, "Oh, I was just at a rehearsal for my school play." "Oh, what are you doing?" "Doing West Side Story." "I love West Side Story." He made me sing through. It was just me and him, me singing at the front of the bus. He made me sing through all of West Side Story. He did Tony and all the Jets. I had to do Maria and pretty much everyone else.
Okay, wow. So you've set yourself up now.
That
Caleb.
Sounds yeah. like
we want to hear a bit of Maria.
Dream come true.
Yeah. A bit of Maria.
A bit of Maria. You ready?
Oh, just... so long ago.
I'm sure you can.
He's forgotten all the words. Here's a clue. The first one is Maria.
I feel pretty. That's from West Side Story. I feel pretty.
No, yes, it is. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, go on. Go on.
Oh, I'll tell you what I will do.
Okay.
I'll do some Anita.
Okay.
"A boy like that would kill your brother. Forget that boy and find another. One of your own kind. Stick to your own kind." Love it.
Yeah. Beautiful.
And being from a choir that's freeing you from slavery on a Tuesday night,
yes.
I like that. I never knew that. I've learned something
Neither
new.
Neither did I, yeah. And I've been in it for... She said I'm a newbie. I think I've been in for about 9 years.
That counts as a newbie.
Yeah, it was after 17 years. I've lost my train of thought. Oh, you must love musicals as well then.
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay.
I love musicals. Some musicals, not all musicals.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your what's your criteria? What's your boundaries around?
Well,
what?
I like some really old school ones, things like, you know, My Fair Lady and Carousel and Showboat and, you know, those kinds of things.
Busby but Barkley, I quite like Busby Barkley.
I also really passionately love Jesus Christ Superstar.
I was going to say that I went when I was about 13, 12 or something in His Majesty's Arcade and I loved it.
It's just a work of complete genius.
See, I call that a rock opera as opposed to a musical.
Yes. You say musicals and I think, do I like them, do I not? You say rock opera.
Yeah.
Whatever it is,
hell yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Ted Neely in Jesus Christ Superstar, the film, just the most amazing.
Oh, stop
voice.
It. No, original London recording, Ian Gillan. Jesus. Ian Gillan, the lead singer of Deep Purple.
Oh.
Just nobody screams like that.
I haven't heard that. I haven't heard that recording.
You must.
See, I'm partial to the 2000 movie myself with Rick Mayall as Herod. It's great.
Rick Mayall?
I never knew there was such a thing.
I know.
Have you not? Do you not know this?
Rick Mayall as in the comedian who died in a motorcycle crash.
As Herod.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who played Jesus, though?
I don't know who played Jesus.
Probably Adrian Edmondson.
No.
That would be funny. The young one. Oh, that's a Love Boat theme, huh?
Yeah, you're the same. I like that. It was really, you know, hip-hop mixed up.
Yeah.
I just find them... I remember I went to the premiere of Evita, the movie, without realising it was a musical.
Oh.
And I couldn't... Every time people go to say something, they frickin' sing. And it's like, stop, just talk.
Now,
give you some dialogue.
As quite an accomplished writer, Fiona... If I may say
quite
that.
Accomplished.
Quite accomplished.
Moderately accomplished.
Very accomplished writer.
Modest.
People don't know. People may not know that you're a very accomplished writer, director, actor.
Who doesn't know that?
You've been. Well, some people don't because they don't read Wikipedia. But
young people, possibly.
Young people. But no. Well, I'm young. I know. I'm sure Caleb knows. He's even younger.
He does.
But now you've completely thrown me once again. Thank
She's
you, Tim.
Off the bus once again.
Well, she just come in from LA, you know.
I know. Well, I should say that Fiona did. Can I just say this? Can I share what you said to me, Fiona? That you were concerned about saying something a bit doolally because you've been on a long haul flight for 12 hours.
Yes, I am.
You got on at 8 o'clock this morning. You've had a bit of a nana nap in the afternoon.
How did you know?
Here you are, because you told me. Oh. And here you are on Kick Arts.
Yes.
And you haven't seen anything silly yet. We'll do a silly monitor, and if you do say anything, we will let you know.
Mm.
Yeah. But as an accomplished writer, how do you feel about that concept? That construct of musicals where people sing about stuff which, you know, they just sing.
They just feel so strongly about it that they have to sing.
Yeah.
I completely love it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is...
Even serious stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, the story of Jesus Christ Superstar, harking back to my favourite musical, that's pretty serious.
Yeah, it is.
And they sing every single word in that opera. There isn't a single one that's spoken.
No.
BTW must tell you a funny story.
You are so down with the union. Wow.
Lol. When we went to the ATC production of Jesus Christ Superstar a few years back, me and my son and my daughter, we're sitting there and they were enthralled. They loved it as much as I did. But at the end of Act 1, you know, the big cliffhanger before the interval is when Judas goes to the Romans and he goes, yeah, okay, I'll give you Jesus. And my daughter, Queenie, turned to me and she went, well, who saw that coming?
So you're not a Presbyterian family?
No. I thought, gosh, there's a sort of a major narrative in Western civilization failed to pass on.
Well, I did say to someone, they said, are you going to go and see Jesus Christ Superstar ATC production? I said, no, because I know what happens in the end. The guy dies.
Doesn't end well for him.
No. Yeah.
I managed to spoil Hamlet for a friend of mine. She was reading it and I joked, oh, have you got to the part where he dies yet? And she didn't. She was like, don't spoil it. And
it's a tragedy.
It's a Shakespearean tragedy. Yeah, what
everyone dies.
Yeah.
Hey, look what I found. And I'll see if I can play this. How old's this?
Pretty old. It's from the 70s. We're not going to sing along.
We sound bad, everyone will think we're really bad.
On the inside.
I was trying to get you to sing along because we want to know what the Jubilation Choir sounds like.
Oh, well, we sound awesome, but we did bring along some of our music that we recorded earlier.
Yeah, we're
going
to play a couple of tracks.
We are going to play
a couple of tracks tonight because you've got concerts coming up in the next couple of. You've got something
we
on
do.
October the 29th.
We do. Look, we'll put our glasses on and give you the gin.
So you didn't have to say the glasses thing because no one can see. That camera up there in the corner.
We like wearing them. We think it makes us look smart.
Because so you're performing at what's the place called? Tapac.
Tapac. I never say Tapac. I always say Tapac.
Isn't Tapac a rap artist?
That's Tupac. And actually, the computer always amends your emails to say Tupac. I know because I've written quite a few. Recently.
And I love the fact, Tanya, that you're pulling out your diary, and I don't mean your diary on your phone, but your actual paper diary.
I have to have a paper diary.
Old world
I'm
paper
actually,
diary.
I'm
Is this the bit where we give you the information?
Well, not till the end.
We do shameless promotion, but you can just hint about what's coming up. So there's a couple of venues. You're not just performing at one place, are you?
No. Correct. Well, on the 29th of October at 6:30 p.m., we're performing at Tapac, 100 Motions Road. You can book through
Tapac. That's by the zoo.
Yes, it's by the zoo. Tapac.org.nz. We did do a fringe show there for the Auckland Fringe Festival, and that was very successful. And so we're coming back.
And there's a bar, and it will be open.
And there's a bar.
So if you come in on Sunday evening, the days are getting longer, and you come in and you listen to some gospel and you have a few drinks.
So gospel is the genre?
Gospel is totally the genre.
Yeah.
Yep. It's black American music, and we're not a black American choir.
No, we're not.
But we love the joy in it. We love the emotion in it. It's about pain and joy and hope and redemption and, you know, everything about being alive and being human in four-part harmony and a cappella, which means no instruments, just the voices.
That must be easy to make a tour with
some pretty cool voices. Yeah, we tour. We go all over. Okay,
we're going to Pitaru in February.
So there, on a bus.
On the way to somewhere else? Or are you actually starting to
go? Pitaru in itself is our destination.
And of itself. So we've got quite a busy schedule. We've got this one at Tapac. Then on the 18th of November, Saturday 18th of November, we're going to the Uxbridge Theatre in Howick.
Which is
new territory for us. We've never been to Howick before.
We haven't been to Howick.
Howick's a lovely place.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
It's a short walk down the end of the road to the beach or up the road for some food.
Mm.
So if you've got any friends in East Auckland, send them along.
Apparently it's a gorgeous new venue, the Uxbridge.
Yes.
I've not been there, but I've heard it very well spoken of.
Yes. And then we're off, I doubt...
Around the country.
Well, just to Pitaru at the
Pitaru.
Moment.
I like Pitaru because there's always a tea rooms there. Now, tea rooms are a thing of the past in New Zealand.
I used to like tea rooms.
I
seek them out.
Yeah, just you get that sort of old ceramic Crownland cup of tea and the grumpy old cow behind the counter who slops your sausage roll on your plate and says it's going to be 50 more cents for your tomato sauce rather than complimentary...
I don't go savoury. I always go sweet in the tea room. I always get a slice.
That's the difference between you and me, Fiona. I always
would you go savoury?
I'd go savoury.
What about you, Caleb? Let's open this out.
I've got the biggest sweet tooth there is.
Yep, a slice.
Yeah. Well, I was walking home today from a workshop, and I passed two bakeries on the way, and I bought a different treat at each bakery.
Oh, I want details. Which treat?
I bought a finger bun.
Oh, stop it.
A finger bun?
I bought a finger bun.
What the hell is a finger bun?
And what would you do with it? I can't imagine.
The mind boggles.
A raspberry bun, you know, with the little...
Yeah.
You know, the long
shaped
one.
Like a finger.
Oh,
did it have a cream filling?
It didn't have a filling, but it had very nice icing.
Hundreds and thousands?
No, just kind of...
That's another 50 cents.
Okay, so that was the first bakery?
Welcome to Cook Arts, the food show.
and the second was a caramel bakery. Slice. Can never resist a caramel
one with
slice.
The crumbly bits on the top of the caramel?
On the top? No, one of the nice thick slab of chocolate.
The chocolate on top of the caramel.
Is it a treat you give yourself after performing or rehearsing? Or?
It's a treat I give myself every day whenever I see.
Shocking.
Not every day. Just whenever I pass a bakery. If there's a caramel slice I haven't tried, I will... I got to try it in case it's the best one I'll ever have.
Are bakeries specific to New Zealand, do you think?
No.
Lots of other places have them, like cream donuts and sausage rolls.
And
you've got your lovely patisserie.
Like in a French bakery, I don't think they'd sell a caramel slice.
No, I don't think they would.
I think we've got
They have their version of the finger bun, which is the éclair.
Yeah, but that's a bit different because that's got chocolate and lovely cream in it.
It's awfully nice. I wouldn't say no to one.
No.
Yes. I love those little eclairs you can buy in the supermarket. And I'm not allowed to buy them anymore because my wife's an ecologist and they have palm oil in them.
Right.
So I can't buy them.
Well, neither you should.
I know,
Tanya. The orangutans are watching.
Do not judge.
Jesus, I'm... Do not judge.
It's Sunday. Where you're allowed to say Jesus.
And I am from a gospel choir.
Yes. So that was my
question. You have to sing it.
Before we got onto the subject of little fingers and things, why gospel? I mean, you were there in the beginning. What... Was it set up to sing gospel, or was that something that happened after you decided to sort of choir out?
Well, it's the kind of music that sounds right just sung by a choir without instruments. Because, that's the way it was invented by the people who invented it. You know, they were work songs, and they were songs for the end of the day, and they were songs for their religious services on a Sunday. But they... That's the way they sound best, as well as it being a kind of music that several of the people who started the choir really love and have sung a lot of. Rick Bryant, for example, who's a very well-known R&B and blues singer in New Zealand and has been in heaps of bands over the years. Windy City Strugglers and The Neighbours and Rough Justice and Mammal, to name but a few. He's just got a big, beautiful, gravelly blues voice that it would be wrong not to exploit as much as possible.
And it's because you have to audition. I've noticed that actually the lineup of some of the people in your choir... They're quite well-known people. We've not talking about, you know, singers. just Caleb from down the road at the bakery.
With his finger bun. No, we've got Jackie Clark and we've got Jennifer Ward Leland.
You obviously have a really strong reputation for quality. So let's have a... Should we have a little listen to one
go
of
on.
You?
Have a listen.
What now? You've given me... You've handed over a... Now, I have to say, people, some of you may not understand what this is, but they've given me a CD, which is a compact disc.
You mock? Well, it's not a cassette tape, is it?
No. We can actually play cassette tapes here at Family
Back to our CD.
And we don't have any vinyl.
But vinyl sounds so much better, though, doesn't it?
Yes.
So we thought we'll do track 14.
Oh, gosh, that means
come on
skip.
Up to the house.
Can you give us a little background on track 14?
Well, it's a Tom Waits number, believe it or not. So we sort of have a huge repertoire, and we move from the very, very beginnings of gospel right through to contemporary artists. So this one is written by Tom Waits and Kathleen Brennan, and we've got the lovely Jackie Clark, who would have been with us tonight had Fiona... really fallen over after that long flight,
but
I gave her a night off.
Because
Jackie's such a hard-working woman. I said, you just stay at home, love.
Oh, stay at home, love.
We'll handle it.
Yeah, Fiona's... She's been on,
she'll be fine.
Business class.
She'll be fine. Yes.
First only.
Yes. So Jackie's taking this one. It's, have a listen, see what you think.
So this is called...
Come On Up to the House.
Come On Up to the House. Jubilation Choir. Freeing the slaves, people, freeing the slaves.
The moon is broken and the sky is cracked. Come on.
She's very good, isn't she, Jess?
Well, the whole, I mean, the power in that, in the a cappella, the whole group is just amazing.
That's really why is. We do it. It just, feels fabulous.
And you can never replay that energy on the radio that you get live out of that performance.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you can't have a glass of wine and watch us at the same time on the radio.
Well, you could.
You'll have to come to TAPAC to do that.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fair... You're selling it on the glass of wine, but I'd be selling it on the music, actually. I could honestly just go along.
No, the music is the main event. Yes. But I think it's nice that you can have a glass of wine while you listen to it.
That's right.
Well, it's kind of... I want to say it's like cabaret in the sense that it's the sort of thing where you go along, you can sit at a table, have a glass of wine, you know, some a cheese board or something, and just listen to a kind of... I find it really difficult. I went to a cabaret show just recently. A German guy came over for the cabaret, Auckland Live cabaret season, and I saw that, and he got offended because we got up and got drinks during the...
During the show.
And it was tables and a bar. And apparently that doesn't happen in Germany.
Well, and I think that's a bit silly.
Well, I think so. I think that's the whole...
Why set it up like that if you're not going to take advantage of it? I think that's a bit precious.
Is your cabaret... Is yours a theatre cabaret or a table cabaret?
It's table cabaret. It's fully immersive and it's free roaming. People can sort of do whatever they want at any time. Wow. Hopefully they'll give some respect to the performers, but yeah, we're not going to shut anyone down for that. In fact, there may even be some distractions during the show that could feature as plot points.
Oh, that sounds ominous.
Why music and theatre not being allowed? What brought that on? Is there something going on in the world that inspired that, or is it just like this would be an interesting idea?
I mean, I think it came from just every single conversation we've ever had, you know, the whole team has ever had with anyone who's tried to say that, you know, it's not a real job. There's still, obviously...
Is it a real job?
Who knows? I mean, you know, it's obviously we're not in as bad a situation as certain other countries, but, I mean, there is... It's hard. There's a kind of push against the ability to be able to do that freely. I know that the Maidment Theatre recently...
Freely's the only way they do want you to do
absolutely,
not being paid.
Absolutely. But the Maidment Theatre recently got taken down by the university, and Speakeasy is being put on through Stray Theatre Company, which is the University Drama Club, formerly known as Stage 2, who have been doing very well for the past couple of years, considering the fact that they were doing shows in the Musgrove studio for years and years and years, and the university just kind of closed that down.
I heard it was to do with earthquake proofing or something.
Well, that's what they say, and I mean, if it's shut, it's shut. At the end of the day, we still don't have a place to perform, so we're just kind of having to make do this kind of site specific area. It's sort of it was a response to that, but just kind of more broadly a response to how hard it can be to kind of have validity with what you want to do with something that obviously has power. That gospel music was great. I was just thinking it would be hard to sit down with wine. I'd want to stand up and shout if I was hearing that, you know.
Well, that was the purpose of gospel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that inspired in church on Sunday, and all those stories about working hard in the fields and working for the man and those sorts of things.
Well, and looking forward to dying because your life was so damned hard. That's why a lot of them, I mean, we're always struck by the number of songs about crossing over and the river and what things are like are on the other side, because you had to believe there was something better than what you were living, I guess, at that time. You know, there had to be a heaven because life was pretty hellish.
There had to be something better than where you were.
Exactly.
Do you think gospel's still relevant today?
Yeah. Definitely. Well, you know, there's a song that we sing sometimes, None of Us Are Free. I mean, there are people all over the world going through terrible things every moment. Women, children, men, you know, there's slavery and it's in all sorts of forms all over the world. So,
how dare you ask that? All art is relevant. Yeah. Always.
just looking at our CD, our cultural artefact, and we've got titles like Learn to Forgive, you know. I think there's something in that for everyone.
Yes.
Everything That Has Breath, Bright Morning Star, Come On Up to the House. You know, they are songs about community, about the things that we're searching for, hope, freedom.
Peace.
Peace is a big one.
Peace is a big one.
When we get that nailed,
yes,
maybe we won't need gospel anymore.
But
we'll still like it.
But we'll still like it.
Still
exactly.
We'll still be singing it on Tuesday.
And that's the world is a place that needs, as you say, all art is relevant.
Yeah.
But it's not just relevant to inform, it's relevant to inspire, I suppose, isn't it? And make people feel something happy. Just to keep them going, is your show about? Is it a fun show?
It's
there lots of, because cabaret can be, you know, as fun and challenging.
Well, we're hopefully not in the too ambitious way. We're trying to kind of cover the whole kind of gauntlet of all sorts of emotion responses to art. So we've kind of, it's been really great actually, because musically the way we've sort of put it together is, we've just gone like, what are all the kinds of things that you can see at a cabaret? You know, you can see a chorus line, you can see a heartbreaking guitar ballad, you can see a kind of great little, you know, barbershop number. And we thought, cool, We'll have one of each. We'll just see what it's like to kind of get the whole range of kind of emotions. But overall, I think it will be fun because immersive theatre is always really fun, I find. I have fun making it and I have fun going to it.
So what can I expect? It's not, so I have this thing about audience participation.
Well, wow, that old question. It's interesting because I always find that the big fright people have with audience participation is, you know, when you're all sitting in your theatre seats and then someone goes on stage and goes, we need a volunteer. And everyone's like, please don't pick me. But I guess the difference here is from the minute you arrive, you're just surrounded by the show. There's no barrier between where you end and the show begins. So, and you know, there'll be a different range of kind of, you know, not everyone will be expected to do everything in the show. But I mean, if you're the sort of person who has fun really responding to audience provocation and getting up there and kind of doing whatever you want, then you'll really find something. And if you just kind of want to sit back and enjoy a show, there'll be a kind of more sedate path for you to take through it as well.
That sounds like me.
Well, that's fine. We cater for all audiences. Yeah.
And being on a flight from LA for 12 hours, you probably want a sedate path. Conferring. Sedate path, 12 hours on a plane. How do you feel about audience? What would you do in a situation like that?
Well, I've been on both sides of that coin because a million years ago I wrote a one-woman show called Lashings of Whipped Cream, a session with a teenage dominatrix.
Yes.
And I was the teenage dominatrix. Ah. So, and I
so 10 years ago.
comparatively recently. But there was audience participation in that show, definitely. And I commanded it, and I commanded it in such a way that people were not going to refuse, because that's a big element of the dominatrix persona.
Absolutely.
You don't ask them.
No.
But I'd be looking at them, because we were always in quite a small venue, because I was treating the venue as if it was my dungeon.
Yep.
And when I came in from seeing off my last client, I'd go, block booking, this is a bit bigger than what I usually do. But so we got on to, you know, my list of prices and services, and I took it from there. But there was always a little sequence where I would talk to people about their sexual fantasies, or I would get them to tell me what their favourite sexual fantasies were, and nobody ever refused.
Wow.
They never refused.
Do you think they were making stuff up, or do you think they were being honest?
Who cares? Yeah, who cares?
Doesn't matter.
A Roman legionnaire was my favourite.
A Roman legionnaire.
And one man said Maggie Thatcher, and I don't think he was making it up.
Ooh.
That's a bit sad, really, isn't it?
That is a bit scary.
I wasn't judgmental.
No.
That's what you call masochism.
I probably roared with laughter.
Yes. Well, you were a teenager at the
That's
time.
That's right.
I was.
Yes.
A few years ago, Ege and I went to La Clique, you know, the sort of saucy cabaret at the Spiegel tent, and I think the woman who dragged me up on stage lived to regret it because she didn't realise she'd just dragged up an actor.
She couldn't
get me off. It's like, yay. Yes.
I find the opposite. I hate getting pulled up. I get all shy.
I
got pulled up in my daughter's school production just recently and totally fell to pieces. I couldn't cope. I didn't know what to say because it was totally controlled and manipulated. But I still was trying to be clever, but I'd lost all my confidence. I don't like it.
It's terribly sad.
I know.
Tell us about it, Richard.
Oh, well, it goes back to my mother, really.
Was that teacher that said you couldn't sing?
Well, I actually got told at fourth form when I was a lead in the school musical that I couldn't sing by my girlfriend's mother's best friend.
Oh.
She said, oh, God, do I have to listen to you sing again?
Oh, no.
And I'm not a great singer. I'm not like a great singer, but I can certainly hold a tune. And sing in a musical.
Yeah, it's mainly acting in a musical.
Well, it is. Yeah. You know, you're singing, you're communicating. It's just singing the lines that you're doing.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting we're all talking about getting pulled up, because I think there's actually far more to audience interaction than just you. You're now my pawn. I mean, even it's as simple as in
pawn.
Right, don't worry. You know, even in like Peter Pan, when you have to get clapped to get Tinkerbell alive again, that's still, you know,
yeah, it is.
Immersion
and kids love that.
Kids love it, yeah, and everyone loves it. I think even in Shakespeare, people love it when you look right at them with a soliloquy. They go, "Oh my God, he talked to me about wanting to kill his wife."
That reminds me of the pop-up globe and the last few years I've been I happen to go at the same time. There seems to be this group of teenage girl groupies who are in the groundlings, looking up, and every time they look at them, they all giggle and laugh. Yes. It's very funny. You've just segued me into talking about audience participation. I took my daughter to see. My God, it's just gone out of my head. Dirt and Other Delicious Ingredients at the Bruce Mason Centre, which was a dance. It said it was dance, but it was more percussion. Oh. And they used dirt and bark and leaves and tomatoes and really textured cinnamon. They broke up cinnamon and spread it through the audience. And these kids were able to smell cinnamon, and they got them clapping and they got them cheering and they got them participating in a really positive way. Oh. And they had old boxes they used as drums and barrels they danced off. And it was a really fantastic piece of, I won't say musical theatre or dance theatre, it was just interactive,
physical theatre. Sounds pretty immersive.
Oh, it was. Yeah. It was immersive.
What did they do with the tomatoes?
They threw them at each other. They had a tomato fight. But they did, before they did that, they did this juggling thing where they threw them into baskets from a distance. And it was kind of
that
like a juggle.
Sounds like
Cirque
fun.
Du Soleil. But the kids were, you had kids who were three, God help me. Because they get restless after a while. They really do. And
they like to do a bit of tomato throwing.
Well, I'm kind of a bit past wanting to sit there with 700 YMCA holiday program children watching a show. I don't really want to be there.
Really?
Yeah. But my daughter was absolutely fascinated by it. And I didn't know whether she was enjoying it or not, because she had that look on her face that children often get where it's just blank and you don't know whether or not they're enjoying themselves or not. And then afterwards she goes, "That was so amazing." Yeah. And it was because she was hypnotised.
Yeah, there was a lot coming at her.
Oh, there was. There was a cinnamon, tomato. Jeez. And these five performers were...
Sound like stripper names.
Well, they could
cinnamon,
have been. I'm not
tomato.
Sure.
Tomato.
You've been minding... Yeah. Hi, my name's... How do you find your stripper name? Your stripper name. It's your mother's...
It's your first pet and your street name, isn't it?
Yeah, first pet and your street name. So mine would be Flower Winery.
That's lovely.
Tigger Williamson.
Flash Dominion.
Miriam Orchard. Sounds more like a romance novelist.
It does.
Can I just point out...
I had a goldfish called Miriam.
Can I just point out I'm talking about a children's show here?
Yes, I know. Sorry.
You got us there.
Yeah, you did.
Yes, it's all my fault again.
They'll be going... Richard did a review on Kick-Arts of our show. What bits can we take out of it?
Yeah, exactly.
The bit about the porn star name on this show.
Don't take this.
But I have to say, I hope that they come back. Mm. Because the shame was, it was only for about... I'm just looking on who was in it. It was only on for about 3 days.
Mm.
And I found that... a little bit of a waste, really, because the energy that they would have in putting that in. Mm. The stage was laid out beautifully. When you got there, the piles of things... The other thing I have to say is that they had the piles of dirt, and underneath the dirt, when they dig, he pulled out a bow. And my daughter went, "It's a violin." Mm. And actually, he pulled out a cello and started playing the cello.
Right.
And so the music was live and was brilliant. And then they pulled out a violin, and these two guys played the violin and the cello beautifully to accompany the music. And the soundscape was all live soundscape. And then the audience participation was the clapping with the kids and them cheering and that. So I would give it... I mean, I've seen a lot of children's shows over the years, and this would be one of the most engaging I've seen, because it just kept changing it up. And it got to the end, I was going, this could get a bit tiresome after a while. Never got tiresome because they kept changing it. And they were funny. At the end, they washed themselves in a barrel like they were going to squelch grapes. I thought they were going to roll in the dirt then, but they didn't. But that's what I would have done if I was directing it. Just a hint there, Caleb. Bit of rolling in the mud, bit of mud wrestling.
Right, dirt. It's still time to add dirt to the show.
Yeah, add dirt to the show. Yeah. You know, they washed themselves down and then flicked all the water on the kids in the front row, who thought it was just fantastic. So, I mean, the Dominion said it was totally captivating, and I would agree with that. Given Molly's
reaction
to it.
It does sound good. I'm sorry I missed it.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's going to come back again, but if it does, I would definitely take the children to go and see it, and actually the adults to go and see it as well. I'm just trying to find out the company. It doesn't... Java Dance Theatre. And it was part of the Tempo Dance Festival, right, which is a great event anyway. So there you go. There's my little review. Thanks for setting me up for that one.
That's all
right. No rolling in mud for the cabaret then, is it? Is it? So we've talked about, you know, stripper names. Is your cabaret a saucy cabaret?
Where are you going with this?
Because cabaret can be quite saucy.
Well, again, like I was saying before, there is elements of sauce and elements of more wholesome nature and elements of everything, really. I think, in this sort of world we've created where performance is illegal, I think everyone's just trying to... Each of these characters is trying to sort of hold on to something they liked. So it really sort of is... It's kind of just a grab bag of sort of everything, every kind of element of cabaret or of performance or of even genres of music. They're kind of all sorts.
Because we had a guest on recently who was doing performance, a solo woman show, and she went over to Iran and performed. Mm. And over there that you could officially perform or you couldn't officially perform. Yeah. So there was restrictive about what they could perform about.
Yeah.
So that's kind of... feeding into what the restrictions around performance and singing.
Yeah, we've done a bit of research and we had a big old day where we just sort of did a bunch of devices and sort of hot seating and questions about just kind of how far in our world the law kind of stretches. And it went sort of as far as, this isn't quite for the thing, but it went quite as far as a man who just was afraid of moving because any gesture that he did might be considered the wrong gesture and he might get fined for it. There's a whole kind of array of ways you can do it. It's really interesting. I learned the other day, actually, in research that prohibition, it wasn't illegal to drink or have alcohol. You just couldn't sell it. Yeah.
So you can make your own.
Yeah. But I guess it's kind of similar thing for us in that, you know, the audience needn't worry that they might get arrested because watching is not illegal, but performing is.
Right.
So you've got to be
It's the same as what prostitution was for a while.
I wouldn't know.
Well, I'm just saying that actually working women were arrested. But
yes. Right. It wasn't a crime to be a client,
no,
but it was a crime to
You're prosecuting the person who was,
offering
the service, which is just stupid. Because without the client, you wouldn't have the service.
That's right.
So,
the patriarchy strikes again.
Well, speaking of which, in the arts, what's the big story in the arts this week around the
world? Well, it's Harvey. Yeah. Harvey is all over everything.
And Sean Plunkett.
Well, yes.
Oh, Sean.
Oh, my God. Mm. What a ridiculous thing to tweet. But so in New Zealand, I mean, you've been involved in the arts in New Zealand for a long time, you know, since you were a teenager 5 years ago. So Harvey Weinstein, that kind of thing in the art, the patriarchal, misogynistic leadership of the arts, is that, do you think it's the same in New Zealand?
Well, I would have to draw a distinction between theatre and film and television.
Right.
Because in my experience, how can we put it? When I started out as a young actress, a lot of the directors that I worked with, the male directors that I worked with, they wouldn't have been interested in me. If they were going to hit on somebody, it would not have been me.
That's right.
The same was not true in my experience of film and television. Mm. That was a much more patriarchal environment. And while I never directly had any casting couch experiences, it's the power imbalance. Because, you know, the person who is older than you, more powerful than you, richer than you, they're in a position to offer something you want, which is the job. So there is that slippery slope of thinking, how far is too far? You know, and if I piss this person off by saying, no, that's far enough, will I, A, lose the job and, B, stuff up my career? Mm. So any young performer is potentially in a vulnerable position, and there are people who abuse their power. Mm. Yes, there are.
And it's not just in the arts, is it? I mean,
No, it's not.
Just the world.
No.
Yes.
This...
My thing keeps going on and off.
I've had that problem my whole life. So, Tanya, you were going to say, Tanya.
Oh, exactly that. I mean, a friend of mine posted something on Facebook today going, you know, come on, ladies, fess up, give us your experiences of sexual harassment. And, of course, everybody's had them at some stage, whether it's been, you know, an employer or in a work situation or, you know, as Fiona, I've never had it. It's not sort of a casting couch per se that I've been aware of in New Zealand film industry, but definitely, you know that if you offend somebody, it might mean that you'll never work in this town again.
Yeah. And so in New Zealand, that's quite significant, really.
Well, you'll never work in this country again. It's a small place.
Yeah, I popped a little thing on Facebook today I saw, which I really liked, was boys will be boys, and then it's crossed out boys, and it says boys will be effing accountable for their actions, which is actually it's not even about the arts industry. It's about, you know, I think if every man, and I'll be generalised here, actually thought about behaviour at some stage in their life, all men have been, could have been predatory in their behaviour, because it's acceptable.
Yeah.
Up until recently,
and the terms that get used to laugh it off. Yeah. I find this one, you know, as
Trump said, locker room humour.
The writer, exactly.
Yeah.
You look at the words they use, and the things like hijinks, and, words like jollity. There was an atmosphere of jollity, and you'll read this and you'll think, nobody's used that word since 1850. Yeah. What you really mean is, we were being rude,
dicks,
but now that you are trying to hold me accountable, I'm telling you that it was just a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. And you think, well, fun for who? Yeah.
Well, then they turn around and say that the victim
has no sense of humour.
Has no sense of humour, or is frigid, or is
uptight. Amazing how that happens.
No one's used the word jollity since 1850, and that's probably where those views should stay, really. Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
They should.
Well, I think the terrible thing was when Trump's outburst was aired on television, I thought, as I think a lot of other women thought, well, thank God that this has happened. He can't get elected now. And then he did. And so that was a huge slap in the face.
And he's made
feminism.
It acceptable.
Well, you know.
By him being elected.
Well, it hasn't stopped him from attaining the highest office in the land, has it?
No. Yeah.
So what would?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is, seeing all this media this week, part of me has been going, this is great. And I mean, this, you know, being Pollyanna, because now all these women are speaking about it happening, and it's not just Weinstein. It's rampant in the arts industry in America, and the film industry in America, and all these young women saying, this happened to me. Hopefully this might put some brakes on where people have to go, I don't have to accept this anymore. Do you think that would be the case, or do you think it's just going to get, in a couple of weeks it'll be forgotten and it'll carry on?
I'd like to think you're right.
I'm an optimist. I'd like to think you're right as well, yeah.
I think it's going to take quite some wiping out. Yes. This is a really, really, really big change that we're talking about.
And Corey Feldman said 20 years ago that there was a huge pedophilic
exploitation of young
men in the film industry in the United States, and nothing got done about that at that point. So, you know, one would hope we may be a little bit more down the track.
Yes.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen in New Zealand. I hope that people feel in a position where they could speak up if it did, or if people see it happening, they could speak up.
Definitely.
Because it's...
Well, everybody who does speak up is creating change.
Mm.
People, you know, whistleblowers are brave.
Yeah, absolutely. Your experience, anything?
I think just what I've noticed is that I shouldn't say that if I haven't. What my experience is that you talk about whistleblowers and people are very vocal. And I think if anything has happened, it's happened at such a minor degree that's been able to have been called out and stamped out.
Hmm.
I think we're quite good at that. But obviously there will still be some things that fall through the cracks that we need to...
Well, we look at well-known actors who run classes who exploit
there was that
young
one.
Women.
Oh, my God.
You know, that's that power imbalance you talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's happened here in the last 6 months. So, you know, that it does obviously happen. But we don't hear about it until somebody is brave enough to go, that was inappropriate.
Yeah, just keep being brave. Just
or,
keep
you know, the classic, I want to take some photos of you, I'm a photographer and you want to be a model, and, you know, would you mind, oh, no, I think you should take this off. And, you know, you do have young girls who are desperate to try and sort of make something or do something and thinking, oh, am I being awkward? Should I be doing this or should I not? And if you haven't got those protections in place or somebody with you, you know,
And the arts, one thing I read today was the arts aren't regulated like other jobs, like sexual, if you, in the workplace, if you're sexually harassed in New Zealand, you can complain to the HR department or, you know, there's avenues there. But in the arts, as an actor or a dancer or a musician, you are a contractor.
Yeah.
And you don't have the same pathways of protection.
All you've got is to say, this person did this to me, and then people in your circles will go, okay, I guess we won't work with them. But that's not enough, really. Yeah.
Or they'll go, well, I won't work with them this time because I need that work next time.
Yeah,
It's a curious situation, isn't it? Well, let's hope that this blows more whistles and people are brave enough to step up. And what annoyed me is people saying, why didn't you step up 20 years ago? Well, because their career would have been shot.
That's right. Yeah. Because they were afraid of him.
He was the most powerful man in Hollywood.
And they were afraid of not being believed, which is always the problem that people have, who do you believe?
It's hard to step up now. I mean, Rose McGowan got suspended on Twitter for saying what she said, and she shouldn't have been, but she still is, I believe. Mm. And, you know, you said 20 years ago, I say it's still there now.
Wow.
Yeah, that light and cheery topic.
Well, we're not all about the light and cheery. It's relevant to the art. You know, these conversations have to happen in our industry.
They have to happen with our sons and our daughters. And that's the thing, is if you empower your daughters and
educate your sons
on what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, and call them out on it.
Well, that's a really interesting conversation around social media, because you have young people who interact via social media all the time and don't actually have... There's less personal contact, there's less teenage pregnancy, there's less STI transmission because they're not actually having physical contact, but there's more cyberbullying, there's more young boys getting their first impressions of sex on watching porn.
Oh, absolutely.
So they believe those relationships are based on what pornography is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And that's a real problem. Yeah. I mean, I know my daughter's been, you know, harassed for being a feminist online, which is quite... And, it's interesting that those young boys think that's an insult to call somebody a feminist.
Yeah.
It's like, right.
Yeah, yeah. You're a believer in racial equality.
Gosh, what are you thinking?
Oh, thank you.
Crazy person.
You called me a feminist. Thanks. Oh, wow, that's so cool. Well, hopefully we're breeding a generation that are aware of these things because of social media and what to do and what not to do. I mean, privilege is another thing. So, but it's, and I think in the arts it's really important that we call on these things as well, that we, you know, that the work that we do, it's spoken about, performed about, sung about, whatever.
Yeah.
So it keeps it in the front forefront of everyone's mind.
I've noticed that conversation has become a bit of a buzzword, like the conversation you know, we want to open a conversation, you know, with people talking about the arts and what they're doing in the arts. We want to open up the conversation, but actually, you know, facetiousness aside, there are conversations that we need to have, and this is one of them.
Yeah. And one of the big things we've been having, I think, in the arts in the last couple of years has been around mental health for artists and
survival
in the
one.
Industry, which is a big one as well.
Well, mental health, not just for artists, I mean, mental health across the board in New Zealand, everybody's touched by it.
And absolutely.
You know, when I've had a very nasty personal experience with that, and the amazing thing that happens is that when something terrible happens in your own family, people come up to you and go, oh, you know, I feel so sad for you. My brother... committed suicide, my uncle, you know, and it's not spoken about as much as it needs to be, but it is affecting so many people on so many different, in so many different walks of life.
Absolutely, I agree.
And different age groups, you know.
Things like the Artify Festival and things that are going on in Auckland, raising money to support free counselling for performers is really important, because it seems to affect a lot of artists, because it's such a knocking profession, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you go along to an audition, they go, no, you're not good enough.
You go to, you know, 100 job interviews and you may get one job if you're lucky.
For 3 days.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's your rent for the next 6 months. So why do it, Tania? Why did you go into the arts as a career? What was...
Because it was something I loved doing, you know, and I kind of gave up for a while. I got sick of being an unemployed actor and a waitress, and I got a real job, you know. And so I've kind of kept the acting as a bit of a sort of, you know, something I do occasionally and intermittently, which is, you know, it means that you're not doing it as much as perhaps people who've really committed to it. But, you know, I still enjoy the opportunity to do it, and I do, you know, commercial voice work, which is great. But, I mean, you do what you feel that you have to do,
It's the same with singing or making music or being an actor or being a poet. You do it because you have to do it, really.
Did you want to do it at school? Was that something that...
Not really, no. I wanted to write novels. I failed on that one. But
There's still time.
No, I was in the school musicals. I can't remember the name of... I know one of them was The Pajama Game, which was quite an odd one. Oh. And I'm trying to think of the name of the other one. I can't think what it was. But, yes, I did, you know, bits and pieces. But yeah, I wanted to write novels.
So when you left school, did you go and...
When I left school, I...
Started to become a novelist?
I was going to be a journalist, but then I got invited to be in a show and decided that doing acting and performing stuff was really great fun. So when I went for my interview for the journalism course, I had basically not read a newspaper for quite some time and fluffed it terribly. Oh. I remember, you know, saying that... What was it? Robert Runcie was a visiting Canadian physician when he was the Archbishop of Canterbury, because I had no idea. So I sort of stuffed that one up.
Yeah. Current events when you're a journalist.
They did, yes. And so I went overseas and did some acting classes and things over there, and then came back and failed to get into theatre corporate because it was kind of collapsing at that stage. So I phoned and they said, yes, we'll let you know when the auditions are. And by the time I'd phoned back, it had collapsed. They said, oh, no, they've already happened. You've missed it.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was a bummer.
Oh, no.
Yes, so I went back to university.
Oh, and studied?
English, anthropology, psychology, philosophy.
Jeez.
Yes. Italian.
Italian. Italian, yeah. Philosophy?
No. And then did a diploma in drama with Mervyn Thompson and Murray Edmund. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. That was an interesting study of, you know, feminist backlash against Mervyn, because he was very, you know, it was very topical.
Where he was tied to the tree.
Yes.
The lamppost.
Yes. A tree. So, yeah, that was a...
What was his book? No, he wrote a book about that, and I read it.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I think I did. I read about the incident anyway.
Yes, that was... Yeah, so he took it with Murray, and the emphasis was on writing, but he was sort of definitely a changed man at that time.
Mm.
Yeah.
See, it is in our history, isn't it? It is actually there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And we say, well, not New Zealand, but actually
it is.
And Fiona, you've got a small CV around the arts, haven't you, around writing and directing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually had to print out 17 pages, so I gave up.
Oh, stop it.
On Wikipedia, I thought, I can't print out any more.
That can't be real. 17 pages?
It's a long list of credits, television, film, plays.
Oh, yeah, no. Overachiever.
Musicals.
I was one of those ones who always did want to do it and went to drama school when I was 17.
Wow. Was that the New Zealand Drama School?
It was the New Zealand Drama School. Yeah. That's what it was called before it became Toi Whakaari, but it's the same institution.
In Vivian Street.
Where were we then? We were in... I can see Taranaki Street in Wellington, and we moved into the Vivian Street premises during the last 6 months of my time there.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so what drove you to do that?
Parents
encouraging?
No. They weren't discouraging, but I didn't stop doing it. But I didn't come from a theatrical family. Right. I mean, there hadn't been. We weren't like the Harcourts or anything. Yes. You know, the
who is?
Well, indeed, you know, they are virtually alone in New Zealand in that, you know, when my generation's parents were young, you pretty much couldn't be a professional performer in New Zealand. But no, my dad was a psychologist and my mother was a preschool teacher. So they were disposed to the arts. They took us to plays. But it was just always something that I loved. You know, I was the kid at my primary school who would be writing plays and putting them on and getting other people to be in them and bringing all the costumes from home and directing them and playing the starring role. You know, I was Captain Pugwash in the Captain Pugwash story. Oh. I was one of them. And as soon as I found out that there was such a thing as a New Zealand Drama School, I thought, well, that's it. I'm going there. There is no alternative. That is my destiny.
Did your teachers encourage you?
I didn't really tell them because I was one of those. I when I got to high school, I was just against everything. You know, I had a moody, rebellious phase, and I couldn't wait to leave school. I was just sort of bored and thought everything sucked. So I didn't tell.
You sound like every other teenager.
Yeah. I didn't tell anybody, I think, at my high school that those were my intentions, but they certainly were. I had the little drama school prospectus. I kept it by my bed. I can still visualise it. It was brown and cream because this was in the late 70s. I can remember all the photographs that were in it, you know, people wearing footless tights and old-fashioned leotards and, you know, all that stuff with masks and making anguished faces. I thought it all looked wonderful. I just couldn't wait.
Certainly a romantic view of the old drama school, wasn't there? And I remember visiting it as a young teen, and when it was in Vivian Street,
yes,
and going, I want to come here.
Yes,
that would be lovely. And so, when you went there, your parents thought you were crazy, or
well, no, because it was the olden days, and you got a scholarship from the Queen Elizabeth. Clean a little of the Second Arts Council.
That ladies and gentlemen, is the effects of jet lag.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell I'm a trained professional, can't you? Yes. You got a little bursary to go to drama school. Not only were there no fees, but we were paid $45 a week to go.
And that was a three-bedroom flat in Wellington.
Well, exactly. My rent was $15 a week. I can't remember what I spent the other $25 a week on. It was probably
was a drama student,
wine and shoes. I can't remember what I ate. Probably nothing. But, you know, it was enough. It was enough to live on.
Yeah.
You could afford to. I mean, there were five kids in my family. So my mother was saying just the other day, if we had to pay for you children to study the things that you eventually qualified as and became, I don't know what we would have done because we couldn't have afforded to do it.
Don't even get me started on that subject.
Yeah.
One thing, we had some of the political parties on here before the election, the week before the election, talking about what they're going to do.
Yes.
And four out of six were keen to bring back the apprenticeship, and including an arts apprenticeship actors. And when I was young, there was arts apprenticships at the six theatres.
Yes, that's what we all aspired to when we were at drama school, that we would come out and we would get to be the apprentice in what were then called community theatres.
Yes.
Yep. Wow. Yep, and that would be our start.
Yeah, and that what a wonderful way to do that, because it gave the theatres young actors who could make coffee and
useful.
And the young actors a chance to work in a real situation.
Yeah.
So let's hope that tomorrow when things come out, those four parties might be working. Well, one of them won't be because they never got into Parliament, but three of them are currently having conversation. Let's just hope they can make it work.
And Labor's promise of one year's free tertiary education is an awesome promise.
Isn't that
increasing
massive?
To 3 years by 2024.
Isn't that massive?
God, make it so.
Because drama students... Well, any student can go and study and not have to worry that come out with a burden. Because as an actor, right, you come out of, you go to Toi Fakati or NASDA or any school, Unitech, and you come out with a burden debt. Mm. And as an actor, how long
you
is it going to take?
You come out with a five-figure debt. Exactly. How are you going to pay that off and then maybe buy a house one day? You know, thank God for Shortland Street, because that's your only hope.
Yeah.
Or, how's this for a segue? You might get a role on a show like West Side.
Tell us about that.
That was smooth, wasn't
Hannah,
it?
Yeah. Thank you. I do the segues around here, Fiona.
I'm known for them,
but you did. It was pretty
wasn't bad, was it? Just a little wrench on the steering wheel.
Well, I was just listening to the numbers you were saying that you lived on, and I was just in anguish. Like, God, if only it was that, like that.
It was the Pleistocene era.
Yeah.
Bottle of milk was 4 cents. You got to remember that.
That's literally 100 times more now.
So you've come, more than that, isn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. Maths was never my
strength. The price of milk.
That was a great play, wasn't it?
It was a movie. It's a
film.
Movie, The Price of Milk.
Gary Sinclair.
That's right.
Carlo Barn and Danielle Cormack.
Wow. That's right.
But we were talking about West Side.
So we've got another celebrity amongst us. West Side.
Yeah.
So you went to university. So let's go back to you at school.
Yeah. Well,
just pointing out, we've only got 15 minutes left we've got life stories. We've got to play another track.
Oh, God.
We're going to do shameless promotion.
So
much in so little time. It's been such an enjoyable chat. Let's hear this. I want to hear the story because at the younger end of the spectrum, because you're practically a teenager.
Two old boilers and an up-and-comer.
I was five when Jubilation was invented.
Shut up.
So your choice to become an actor or a director?
I don't have any other skills, I think.
There is that too.
I toyed with the idea of law school, and I walked out of the middle of my exam because it was a nice day and I wanted to go read a play in the park. So I think I kind of just made my decision for me. And yeah, I've been sort of acting theatre for a few years, and then I was doing TV, did West Side.
So how did you get West Side? Was that just an agent, good audition?
Although I did email her because I was working at TV3 at the time, and I saw an internal email that says that they were looking for, this is for immediate dispatch, we're open call for Wolfgang West, and I sent it through my agent, give me an audition. And I didn't get Wolfgang West, but I did get Sparky, so that's something. And yeah, it's just been great to kind of have that every summer to sort of do, and then for the rest of the year, just kind of, I've been directing recently because, I don't know, I just have. It's not
something you can do.
Something you can do, yeah. It's a kind of new. I always argue with my directors when I'm doing theatre as an actor, and I think maybe that's a sign I should.
I did a bit too.
Isn't that in the job description?
No. You're supposed to do what you're told.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting you should say that, because a lot of the young theatre practitioners that come through here, the young actors, even the young dancers, the young directors, they all talk about this amazing collaboration process.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, it depends on whether you're working collaboratively or whether you're working with an
old school director
who's collaboration business going on when we were young.
No. And so I go back to what you were, I mean, some of the young directors that I was, you know, when I was younger, who were part of that, you know, the very forceful yell at you and tell you you're a bowl of sick and you're hopeless, don't come back again. I got fired from, I was a lead in a play, I got fired at the age of 14 by my lovely drama teacher who taught me a valuable lesson about not being a little shit. But, you know, things were different in those. The things were different. And I listened to this collaborative process and think, it's so amazing. And you talk about this is devised.
Yeah.
So you have to be willing as a director, I suppose, to take it from people.
It's great, because we've got a full kind of cast, including all the dancers and singers, of about 20 people. And it's great, because they've all sort of had input in some way or another to the world we've built. So I've got, like, about 5 exercise books just full of all the kind of stuff we've come up with, and I've got to go over it all and find all the gold and kind of turn it into theatre, really. But no, I love the collaboration process. I always feel like I need to be more decisive as a director, because I've always been, you know, working with actors and I think, like, oh, you just keep doing your thing, it's going to be good. And I go, no, I've got to give them something. I've got to give them something to work with. But it's been great with this, because I've just had to go, like, great, I've heard all 20 of your stories and we're going with story D in this one.
And the winner is...
Yeah, we're just going to make a decision and surge forward. It's great.
Thanks very much for your input. And now I'm going to make a decision.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, I suppose someone has to, don't they, in that process?
That's the director's job.
And the writer, I suppose, too. Fiona, you know, you write something, you got to direct it. And do you like people screwing with your work?
No.
What do you think?
That was a leading question.
Yeah, you even asked me that. No, I like collaborating up to a point, you know, and that's genuine. You know, I welcome their input. You've got to be free to play and to make offers and, you know, not be afraid of being shot down in flames, but
at the end of the day,
I do believe that there is, at least in the kind of work that I'm interested in, there is at the end of the day a kind of an organizing intelligence, because there's what the work is actually for, there's what the work is doing and what it means, and I don't think that is something that is come up with collaboratively. I wouldn't, would I? Because I'm an author. I think it's the product of one mind. And I'm not saying that's the way that everybody has to work, but that is the way that I like to work.
I think it's good to have all these, you know, these performers, they're all just like little gold mines, and I just take the good stuff from them. It's not that I'm like, oh, and everyone gets to decide what. I make it sound like I'm a terrible dictator, but it's not so much that. It's like when you're writing, you do, you know, research or kind of inspiration. It's just they do that for you.
I had a director say to me once, Richard, this is not a democracy.
Oh, yeah.
It is a dictatorship. And I am the dictator.
Do
as you're told.
I had that line as well.
Yeah, and I went, whoa. And I accepted that. That's how I was trained.
Yeah.
I was trained in that way. That was kind of what it was. And I was a bit lippy.
Really? Now that I'm the captain, you know, I love being the captain of my ship, but I have to say that as a crew member on other people's ships, I could be an absolute pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I recognise that now. Yeah. Now that I am a captain.
Now that I've made captain.
So moral of the story is everyone should just become a director.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to, you should give it a go because then if you find that it's not for you, you'll go, okay, I'm going to be a better crew member now because I've tried being a captain and I've, you know, got it out of my system.
And with 32 members of a choir, you all have to be good crew members, don't you?
Yeah. We do. We have to be sensible.
Yeah. So what's a good sensible song to... Before we go into shameless promotion time, we won't go out on it. We'll play a little bit, then we'll come back and you can shamelessly promote your shows.
Well, we could do track two, Nobody's Fault But Mine.
Now you're making me go in reverse on the CD player, and that's
really tricky. This features the beautiful vocals of Buzz Worley, who's one of our little treasures.
And it's by Blind Willie Johnson, who is a blues legend.
Okay, so Jubilation Choir. Performing 29th of October at Tapac.
Yes, or Tapac, as some people call
and
it.
And 18th of November at Uxbridge.
Uxbridge.
That's
so beautifully timed. When we come back...
I'm a trained voice artist.
Oh, lovely.
Voice artist.
You did that really well. Oh, the irony.
Oh, the irony. Timing's everything.
That was great. That was really good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to going and seeing you guys.
Cool. Yay.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
We can
set me up.
Yeah. You're talking to the right person.
You're to the right person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. So if I wanted to be set up to come and see the show, if I wanted to buy tickets, because it's well worth spending the money.
If you want to buy tickets, go to tapac.org.nz or Uxbridge Theatre. They're selling the tickets themselves, so just go to Google Uxbridge Theatre and their ticketing people will set you up. We're very reasonably priced. Only $25 for pre-sales and $22 if you're a child or unemployed or, you know,
student.
All of
student
the above.
Or an actor.
Or an actor, exactly. We'll do any, you know, we won't ask questions. Yeah. Slightly more at Uxbridge, but only a couple of bucks more. And, yes, so Sunday 29th of October, Tapac, 100 Motions Road.
Opposite the zoo.
By Western Springs College. 6:30 p.m.
kickoff. Nice. Oh, that's a reasonable hour. How long's the gig?
About 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
So I can possibly get here by 8 o'clock. I might have to miss the last 15 minutes.
Well, that's okay. Are we going to do two sets with an interval, or are we going to bang two sets with an interval?
Yeah. So I can leave at halftime. You won't be offended.
You could leave at halftime, and we might not even know.
No.
Well, you would, because I'd make a really song and dance. Would you? Because that's who I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Caleb.
Yes.
Mr. Westside. You have another series coming up.
Yeah, season 4. We start shooting over summer, so it's
that's fantastic
fun.
News for you and for the crew and cast.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. We're excited.
Nice. So in the meantime, though, you've directed this cabaret called...
Speakeasy. Yep. And the shows are the 25th, 26th, 28th and 29th of the month. It's October, right?
Yes, it is.
I've just got these four numbers looking at me and not actually a month near it. So that's the week after next.
It's this month.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
This month now. Yep. That's the week after next.
Have you got jet lag as well?
No.
Is it rubbing off, though? Fiona's jet lag's rubbing off on you, I think.
I had two separate rehearsals yesterday and a workshop this morning, and then I just... All I've eaten is two desserts. All I've eaten is the finger bun and the caramel slice.
Yes, we did hear about that.
You're going to have to talk to you about your nutrition.
I'm going to go home tonight and have a nice, big, nutritious dinner.
Head of broccoli.
Yes.
Actually, it's not a bad idea. I might do that. Thank you. But tickets are from...
Anyway,
tickets are from iTicket, 20 for students, 25 for normal people, I guess.
That's so reasonable.
Normal, reasonable people.
We've got a Facebook event with more information. The venue is secret, but it is on university campus, and we'll be releasing more information about the venue next week.
Tell me why it's a secret. Is that because of the whole speakeasy idea?
Yeah,
or are you worried about being busted by the police?
Well, you need a password.
Are you selling something else?
You need a password to get in. Is why.
So how do you get the password?
Because the big thing about it being...
You get a password by booking the tickets. There are door sales, but you might need to talk to a hustler to try and get you in the back way.
So where do you show up to if you don't know where you're going?
Well, okay, if you don't know where you're going, I'd suggest you go to somewhere called the Cap and Gown Lounge on university campus.
And someone will set you up.
Speaking
of hustler, do you see that the guy who published Hustler, the pornographic magazine,
Larry Flint,
has just put a $10 million reward out for anyone who can provide any real evidence to impeach Donald Trump.
Yay.
A full-page ad in the New York Times.
Wow.
Saying, I will pay $10 million if anyone can provide me with actual evidence that we can impeach the president.
Wow.
Because we cannot do another 3 years of this man.
No. Okay.
I thought that was quite brave of Larry.
Yes.
He did that before and outed a Republican senator who was abusing women. Same reward. $1 million reward. Generic kind of thing, and it came out. So it seems quite ironic.
Coming from Larry.
Just a tad, but there you are. Anyway.
I know. Sometimes surprises come out of the funniest places, don't they?
Never too late to get into heaven.
No.
Never
too late.
On that note...
Now, that sounds like a song.
That does sound like a song.
But it's not the song we're going to play out on. Because rather than play our usual boring theme song that people usually listen to and love, we're going to play I Want to Ride That Glory Train. Because we want everyone else to do that. We want you to ride the glory train of the arts, go out there and support the arts in Auckland. Because these people can't be doing it unless you're buying tickets and going and supporting these fantastic people who are providing you some lovely entertainment, thought-provoking ideas and all those sorts of things. Go out there this week. Don't be a Weinstein. Okay. Check what you're doing.
Whatever you do.
Or a Trump.
Or a Trump or anyone like that. Just go out there. Have a good time. Be careful out there. It's dangerous, as they used to say on NYPD Blues. But go out, listen to this lovely track from Jubilee Choir. Catch their concert. Thank you. And we'll catch you next week here on Kick Arts. Go out this week and kick some arts.
Wanna ride that glory train? 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 The only way we'll ever get to heaven is to ride that glory train.
Yeah.